Right, welcome to the City of Tukwila Council Finance and Governance Committee meeting. I have with me Councilmember Hogarty and myself for president. I know that Deshaun's going to show up, Councilmember Quinn shortly, but we're going to begin. I mean, the business agenda for May 8th is item 1A, Amendment to Interlocal Agreement with Washington State Broadband Office for Private LTE Network. Say that fast three times, and Bill Bush, our Chief Technology Officer, will take it.
Joel Bush, Chief Technology Officer. So before you, you have an amendment to the interlocal agreement we signed, I think about 3 weeks ago. So the state is providing an additional $400,000 to us to make sure we can deploy the network without reducing too much scope, you know, because it's a challenge. And then the other piece is they're going to give us some funds to purchase Chromebooks. So that's the revision. Any questions?
No question.
Any financial impacts?
The financial impacts were after the proof of concepts that last 3 years, we'd have to budget some things for the licensing of the service and the software of the service itself. But the grant will cover the initial 3 years for the proof of concept.
Okay. So the committee, on this one, we are doing approval for it through the COW tonight and a special meeting for consent agenda tonight. Are we all heading out for that? There you go. It was unanimous, essentially. Going to move on to item 1B, Capital Facilities Financing, Public Works Campus Phase 2. Brandon, this is Relations Manager. Take it away.
Thank you. I'm going to just haul off the press. Everything that's in it is in your packet. I just wanted to, make it, highlight the more kind of relevant stuff. We've got to share. John Palowitz, Laura Mannon, and Justine Kim, the project team, are also on.
I'm waving at everyone.
Good to see you all. Does anyone take the lead of you?
I am. I'm just trying to.
Your PowerPoint?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll just chill.
So, presentation. So everything you have up on the screen is what is in front of you, just for ease if you want to look at it. So what we're coming to you tonight is to ask to move ahead with the next phase of the public works facility. So the total requests, SOJ has obtained estimates. The total to get us to design and pre-construction is $5.1 million with additional owner's contingency of just under $800,000. So what we're asking for is to be able to take these contracts to the June, the May 22nd COW meeting and the June 5th councilor meeting. So I want to back up. I want to provide a bit of an overview of kind of how we got here. So in a seismic study done in 2008, which we updated in 2022, we found that our buildings for first responders would be unusable in the event of an earthquake. If you remember, most of our facilities, first responding facilities, were built in the 60s and the early 70s. And so over the last few years, the City of Tukwila has had a concentrated effort to upgrade and improve our facilities. So in 2015, the city council adopted a report investing in Tukwila, a central government services facilities plan. This recommended the construction and or replacement of several public safety buildings, including a new justice center, replacement of three fire stations, and a new combined public works facility. 2016, we issued the public safety bond that passed with just over 60% of the vote. The bond measure was only for the fire stations and the justice center. It did not, it was never included to have the public works facilities in there. 2017, with the adoption of the bond measure, we had a siting advisory committee, which provided recommendations on the fire station's location, justice center, and the combined public workshop. 2018, we began acquiring the land. 2022, we completed the fire stations as well as the public workshops. So, to do all this, we did what we had was the D20 model. So the D20 model outlines the various revenue sources that we had to allocate to the Justice Center and to the fire stations and to land acquisitions. And so that was intended to be an all-encompassing kind of model that we used to track things because we wanted to track the voter-approved projects. So that is shown on page 10 of your budget. It's also included as a page in the PowerPoint. So a little thing, the last project that is left is to replace Minkler Shops. So our public works facilities, we got off of George Long. Minkler Shops is the one that's remaining. This houses our utilities, so our streets, sewer, water, and surface water, streets isn't a utility, but these are our functions there. So this is the facility that we use in the event of when we have snow and ice remover. It's where our utilities crews work out of. And as you notice, it's right along the Green River. So there's a levee there that protects it and protects the rest of the South Center area. The included copy is an attachment of a plan that the that WIRA has to eventually like to purchase that property and use it as a way to set back the levee and do a shoreline restoration project there. So Testa Fits, the council authorized in 2022, $350,000 of funding that is split equally between the utilities and the general fund. That work has been completed, and now we're at moving to the next phase, which is design and pre-construction. So through that test to fit, we had multiple briefings with the city council, with the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, city council as a whole, finance and governance. We did one open house, and we had five concepts for new, one concept trying to see if we could utilize the existing building. The one that rose to the top is concept A, which I'm showing here. One thing I want to caution is going through this whole process gives us a greater opportunity to look at where things might land. At the end of the day, concept A might end up being concept A, B, something where we move things around because of flexibility. But going through that process gives us the ability to understand how we can site stuff on the property. So using the D20 model as an example, we kind of have what's called our Public Works Campus Financial Model. So it's very similar to the D20. We utilize various funding sources that can be allocated to the project, debt service, tracking partners for funding, expenditure tracking and monitoring, and it's a dynamic model. As new information comes in, we can change it. As we get revised information, both on costs, expenditures, or on bonds, costs, we can update them. I want to be cautious. We are not asking for money for construction. We're only asking for money to move to design and pre-construction. As I go through this, you're going to see that there's multiple off-ramps that the city has that we can utilize. So all we're asking for tonight is the pre-construction. However, I don't think we should design something if we never thought there was a realistic way of how we would construct it. So we wanted to answer that question too about how we would fund the construction. So if you look in your packet, page 13 of your packet, I did three scenarios. So this is a D20. This is kind of the public works thing, kind of off the D20 model. So starting in 2023, we show our burn. That $5.9 million that we've requested is not all burned in 2023. It would carry us into 3 years, 2023, 2024, and 2025.
Well, where is that on this?
On page 13. It might be easier to look at page 13 of your packet.
Are they all the same?
Yeah, it's all the same.
So just guide me on the first
page. Yeah, so the first one at very top, if you see design and pre-construction 2023, we're estimating that we need $1.72 million. And then in 2024, it's $2.8. And then for design and pre-construction, it's about 1.3. And so as you go down to the bottom, to fund that for 2023, it's a split between the general fund and from the utilities. The general fund revenue, we have excess. We have funds available in 302 that we can pour from. We also have land sales.
Going a little faster.
Sorry.
So it's going to come out of general funds. I see general funds.
Yep.
I'm trying to figure out which of these lines are, if all of them. Sorry to interrupt with questions, but I just want to know one. Are handling the design and pre-construction costs.
I'm sorry, what was that again?
Is there some line item that matches the expenditures up above and the general fund expenditures?
Yeah, so if you notice in 2023, it says expenditures total is 1.725. If you go down at the bottom there, it says all sources, 1.725.
Gotcha, thank you.
So that carries through. 2025 gets a little bit weird just because we were trying to show if we started construction that year and if we issued a bond that year, which we probably would carry the bond through 2025 and 2026 in two issuances. So that's where those numbers match up.
That's why 2025 doesn't match.
Correct.
Okay.
But you notice as you get to the end in 2027, 2028, assuming that everything is built, right, now all we're doing is funding the debt service. So and so that you see the year-end balance at zero because we've spent everything and we have no more expenditures except for the debt service. So this is the first model. This assumes no land sales. This is kind of what I assume, kind of a base model. No land sales get put into the into this. 5% issuance on the bond and a 30-year bond. So moving ahead, your next page, this is what I call S2. The construction costs remain the same, but now we have about, I'm allocating on land sales starting in 20, we're starting to allocate our land sales. If you notice in 2025 under land sales, and the green under that, 9.5 million of land sales. That's a conservative estimate that would go towards this. And so again, it reduces the bond that we would go out, which then reduces our interest payments or our total payments because we've reduced the bond amount.
Well, I see the 9.5, but there's also 500,000, 300,000 in the previous years.
Correct.
Is that going to this or something else?
Yes, that's going to the, so if you go back to council member, if you go back to S1, we show land sales and 300 and 500,000 in that base model as well. So what I meant, sorry, the 9.5 is for construction.
I see it now. Okay, thanks.
Moving ahead, S3 is still the 9.5 million of land sales in 2025, but now we're seeing what would happen if we had interest rate at 4% when we issued the bond. And so it lowers the debt service that we have to maintain in 2026 and onward, 2027 and onward. I think 5% is very actually on the very high end for a bond. I looked today in 30-year bonds, we're at about 3.5%. So I would prefer us to be on that negative, that kind of high risk tolerance, you know, at 5% and knowing how we can budget for that in case something should happen, which I'll talk to in a moment. So bond issuance, this is also in your packet, but assuming a bond issuance, again, highest amount, no land sales, about $7.8 million for a bond, which would cover our hard and soft costs in 2025 and 2026. 2% fee for our bond costs at $1.5 million. So our total bond is about $79.4 million. To the right, I show an allocation, 50-50 allocation of the bond going to the utility and the general fund, and then creating the payment for each one. The idea is a 50-50 split between the two. And so this is kind of what I would assume is our the highest bond is 2.5 million that the general fund would have to support and 2.5 for the utility. Now, we budgeted in our CIP and our budget, the city allocated 1.95 million per year of debt service for the general fund to support for the public works facility phase two. That equates to about a $60 million bond issuance. So this chart shows maximum payments that would be required. Those are reduced again if we change the scope, if we have more land sales, if we have funding partners, the bond amount for the general fund is reduced. So this shows what happens when land sales are and an alternative scope is allocated. So if we change the scope, land sales, we put 10 million, it reduces the general fund obligation. And so now the general fund is only asked to service 1.9 million. That's lower than what is budgeted in the city's adopted budget. Next, partners. So both the design parks and capital, we've been having conversations with King County Metro and King County Parks about us helping provide some of the capital.
You were talking about the bond issues, the annual debt was all recovered.
Yes. So I'm going to come back to that. I just jumped into it. So the other thing, too, is how do the utilities stay on the how do we charge the utilities? What we're contemplating is an idea where the utilities pay rents for the property, and that rent is set. We would use a broker's estimate to determine the rent. There is a cost escalation, and then that is allocated to the utilities based upon a percentage of their use of the property.
Well, you're going fast.
Sir.
You named a bunch of partners, and now we're renting to the utilities.
Yep.
Slow down and explain.
Sure.
What your plan is there.
Yeah, so the partners, right, we've talked to King County Metro about a decant facility. Their decant facility is closing down in North Tukwila, and they're looking for a home. King County Parks, we're talking to them about helping. We are currently discharging onto their property. There are surface water, and they would like us to move that. And so they have hinted and have preliminary discussions that they could help move, help us get off of discharging our stormwater onto their property. And then we're looking for other partners that might pop up as we move along.
So we're discharging it onto their property.
Mm-hmm.
We're just where?
So the Fleet and Facilities property is discharging onto the old Sleep and Tiger property, that old motel property. They've done it as a restoration. Mm-hmm. They've been doing it for years. They've done it before we bought the property. And so, but King County would like us to look at a new way of discharging someplace else, our stormwater.
We rip up the ground, we do resurfacing, we put drains in different directions.
Correct.
They're going to help us with that?
They have preliminary said that they would like to help us with that because they want us off their property.
Okay. Sounds good. So that's just a wash. We agree to do it and they pay for it.
Right, but we were going to have to do stuff anyway. So I don't necessarily know if it would be a wash because it might actually be money that comes that we save because we weren't going to have to do some of that work ourselves.
Okay.
So,
but there's no revenue and there's no outlay.
No, there is a revenue and an outlay. So they would provide us funds, and we had always considered an option of discharging the water towards the east.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that is more expensive, then we would probably do that, but ask them to help pay for that versus discharging directly onto their property.
Okay. So they're going to it sounds like I'm being dense, but it's just for some reason not coming in clear to me. We're going to redirect this thing one direction or another to their agreement, and they're going to pay for it to be done.
They have said that they would be interested in paying for it. I'm not going to say it's a commitment yet until we get something in writing.
Okay, it's different than utility rent, though. I'm just trying
correct
to figure out
yes
what you're saying.
Very true.
And then who are the others? It's SeaTac and all those guys are.
SeaTac, of course, already has one. We have one other partner that I did not get their permission to reveal yet, but we're still having conversations with them. But that is something that's still very early. So.
Okay. Now March on the end.
Okay. No, thank you. Yeah, thank you. So utilities, I'm talking about now our utilities, the water, sewer, surface water. They are on a property. They've always been on a property that is owned by the general fund. And so there is from an equitable standpoint, because not all Tukwila taxpayers are actually ratepayers, right? Mm-hmm. People who are in 125 or Valley View actually are not a Tukwila utility provider. And so, but they are a Tukwila taxpayer. And so we want to make sure that the utilities, that the ratepayers are compensating the general fund for being on a city-owned property. And so we've been operating on a 50-50 split. We were, you know, that is the, we eventually will true it up, but how this would work, we're envisioning is our utilities would pay us rent to be on the property,
mm-hmm.
and we would get a broker's estimate, and then that rent would increase on some set percentage, per se, a certain amount. It would help reduce the general fund's obligation for the on the property.
Do utilities pay rent now?
They do not. That is a bigger question. So they have been on the Minkler property since the late 60s, early 70s, and they have not paid rent to be on that property. The example.
That's not 125. Who is it?
It's us. Oh. It's us, right? It's our utilities. So it's our utilities that are not paying rent to be on a property that was purchased by the general fund.
So you're thinking they should be paying taxes?
Saying they're not taxes, they should be paying rent.
Just paying rent,
mm-hmm.
that passes through to pay off some of the debt services.
Yes. So we've always envisioned a 50-50 split. So a minimum, they should at least pay half the debt service.
This sounds weird when you say they, because they is us.
It.
So we're taking out of one pocket and putting it into another?
Yes.
Okay.
As we do with a lot of our funds.
Okay.
So
if they weren't being charged, that they'd be spending it on public works?
Yes. I mean, or they'd be, yes. And so it's a question of how do you want to service the general fund, which is a property that is owned, you know.
Okay.
So if 125, right, in Valley View, they had to go out and buy a piece of property for their activities.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So debt capacity, it's in your memo, but we have $96 million capacity starting in 2025.
Councilmatic.
Yep, Councilmatic, and $107 million in 2026.
Okay. I guess that's written here. Okay.
This is from your budget and from the CIP. It's in your packet. This shows, just wanted to show that, you see at the bottom, proposed debt starting in 2025, 1.951, that the general fund would support of debt service for the public works.
So we do an LTGO for $30 million.
We would do it. So it was budgeted for 60,
mm-hmm.
but remember there's that 50-50 split. 50 general fund, 50 utilities. So that $30 million is the general funds, what was budgeted in the general fund's obligation. So design and pre-construction, these are the estimates that we got from SOJ, Miller Hayashi for the architects. We have the whole team here that would take us through to design and pre-construction. We also allocated 15% of contingency funds. We are not allocating those contingency funds because we want to be able to use those where they might come up. And so it could be with a different project, if we need some other work that's not listed here, or if one contract needs additional funds. That's the idea. You really can't do 15% across the board because some people might need different contingency allocations. So again, design and pre-con only. We're not asking for funding to move to the construction phase. I do think this is a good time to do some design work. Construction costs will continue to go up, but they typically have cooled somewhat if we hit an economic downturn. They do not come down. They simply don't rise as quickly. When I pulled some data going back to 2009, which included still the Great Recession as well as some other downturns, it's always a good time to have shovel-ready projects. So, we learned back during the Great Recession if there's ever state or federal funds that came out, and like, we got a project. If you got something ready to go, we're happy to help support. So interest rates for muni bonds are high, but they are not that. We're at 3.5, and they typically track with the 10-year Treasury. 10-year Treasury has gone up because of the work the Fed's been doing. But, I think by the time – there's a lot of talk that those treasuries are going to start coming down in 2 years. So financial impact, this is – you saw earlier, but this is – the cash burn for design and pre-construction. So 1.725 in 2023, 2.875 in 2024, with the remainder in 2025. That carries us through to get to May 1st, 2025 for design and pre-construction. The general fund, there's various sources that we can take these funds from for the general fund's obligation. 302, the 303, I'm getting my funds mixed up. We also had an opportunity to perhaps get additional ARPA funds. So the state, a lot of people have been giving back their ARPA funds to the state of Washington. We think there may be an opportunity to go forth and get some money for ARPA. So we are going to try to do that, both for design as well as construction.
Do you have that in here?
It is not. We just had the meeting today. But I wanted to, any additional ARPA funds we got, we would take off the general fund's obligation. The first, I think we're actually going to see if we can get the full $5.9 million, so it would eliminate any obligation for the general fund and the utilities. But we're still looking into that. So next steps, May 8th, that's this meeting, May 22nd, briefing to the committee of the whole, June 5th. Would be when we would ask council to give final action for the mayor to authorize contracts related to design and pre-construction. I want to continue talking about off-ramps. We will have multiple off-ramps as we go through this project. Again, we're not talking about design and we're not talking about construction. So the council is going to get a briefing in October, June 2024, March of 2024, and eventually, of course, the council has to authorize bond issuance, as well as authorizing us to do construction and to even issue those bids. So that concludes my presentation on our request to move ahead with design and pre-construction.
So you're not going to revisit the annual debt service page?
I did. So again, this shows the 1.95 is 30 million supported by the general fund. The other 30 million is supported by the utilities. Now, our initial estimates are higher than 60 million for total construction. However, the general fund's portion, if we allocate the land sales, which are no longer needed in the D20 model, if we allocate those towards public works, it would reduce the general fund obligation. If we have cost savings, if we reduce the scope, all of that would be items that would reduce our bond issuance. If we bring on other partners, all that would get us down lower. So, that's the annual debt service.
There's a lot here. I am speaking in support of this. And I'll tell you why, very big picture, not in the weeds. Because we talk about, our council likes to talk about hampering other councils with debt, right? With debt service. But if we don't do this, then we are hampering other councils with projects that need to be done. That are, and with costs escalating, that are just going to get more expensive in the future. We have the Minkler Shops, which is on a levy that is not certified and will never be certified, probably, that levy. So it's just time to revamp that. So we need to get out that liquefaction and everything else. So it's time to do this project. And you said it, it's probably going to change. It will. I mean, there's no way. It's going to change along the way. It's going to morph into what it's supposed to be. I read in here somewhere that the cost, current estimates that are for every month in delay of the project's construction cost would increase approximately $300,000 a month. That just, you know, that's beyond, I'm like, really? But I assume that you researched this and you're saying this. Now, let's go back to the public safety bond where we had projected out the costs, and then the costs turned out to be quite a bit more. If we had had something like this that was realistic, we might have been more on track with what happened there. So even though this seems like, oh my gosh, this seems onerous, it's realistic. And so I choose, as a policymaker, to go ahead and do this project because it saves money in the long run. It keeps our council so that we have this project done, keeps our city safe. And we are juggling it around as we go. And spent a lot of time, actually, Laurel got to hear my run through and answered a lot of my questions as best she could. I don't think I have any other major questions about it. I'm in support. It's a tough thing. But it's just like, do you do it now or do you do it later when it costs even more and it costs more to our residents to do it later. So do it now. That's what I think. And I mean, based on what I have here, that's what I said.
Just would like to have our GMQA weigh in.
John's on the phone. John, are you there? Turn off my, I'm gonna stop sharing.
Here I am, okay. So you want a general comment from me?
This is a pretty good point in time to probably give us your assessment, the health of the project, any negatives, any positives that you see.
Okay. Well, number one, this is a great financial analysis, and I think this is so important. I was involved with a lot of this on projects at the university when they were selling bonds to finance projects out there. So, you know, the rigor that I see, and quite frankly, I don't understand the validity of the numbers, not knowing, obviously, the economics in play for the city of Tukwila. But It looks very thorough, looking at all the different things. The design and the financial plan need to be tied together. As you go through design, at each phase, they need to be balanced. For an example, you know, right now we have a project that's, say, roughly $83 million. We need to have a finance plan that shows how to get $83 million. As we go through the design, if the project gets more, if it gets less, that finance plan needs to be looked at and balanced and make sure that the two are tied together and work. If for some reason, who knows, if the finance plan needs to be less, then that informs that the project design needs to be less. So the rigor of this plan is very, very impressive. Looking at the design, As an architect, I see the design phase a little bit differently. I see the various phases of design, such as schematic design, design development, and construction documents, and then bidding and construction. So at each one of those phases, you do have a chance to relook at the project, you know, verify the cost, verify the design, and you have an off-ramp with your design team. Typically, you will say to the design team, proceed with schematic design, period. So they're authorized to do that next level. So this sort of same rigor would happen at the end of schematic design. More will be known, the cost will be firmer, obviously, because start to get an actual design for the building, not just cost based on a conceptual plan. So you have a way of stepping through this project before you finally get to the point where you have to authorize construction, and that's where the big dollars obviously come into play. So I would recommend going to the next step, starting design, but authorizing schematic design. The other part is, you know, I would recommend using, and I know Tuck Woolah has used a GCCM, General Contractor Construction Manager. If everyone is still comfortable with that, that would be my recommendation to do that. I would move ahead with getting a contractor on board, your general contractor, construction manager. Definitely have them at the ready for that end of schematic design to do their cost estimate and to help everybody look at the cost. So I would get them going sooner than later. So far, I think the conceptual design process is very rigorous. It was very thorough. I was impressed with that. That's what we know about the project today. And I know you've had some projects in the past where not enough money was allocated for a project and the project costs end up ballooning. But this is a good start. You know, this is as much as we know about the project and the finances right now. And I would continue on that effort at each step. So if the financing plan needs to be approved, you can't say, well, we can do $70 million right now, and hopefully the architects will squeeze $13 million out of the project in the next phase. That doesn't work. You have to balance the two, go ahead, and then reanalyze it at the next phase.
Thank you. Can we get some kind of a document from you by the time we get to the committee of the whole meeting that this is scheduled for? So we actually have, as a council, a professional opinion that we can rely upon and say, pointed here, he said this about where we were at this point in time. I don't care if it's stoplights or what you have, but just an assessment.
Yeah.
With your recommendation, that would be helpful.
Okay, all right.
Okay. Second question I have, I may be getting this conflated. We talked about a D20 plan. We're meeting up, doing stuff with other facilities. That's all in some kind of place somewhere else. You took the model, which I appreciate. You moved it over, so at least has the same similar looks and feels to it. But you threw it into 30 years.
Yes, and that's something. So the reason I did 30 is that's what's shown in the budget. So the budget showed a 30-year. I could at the next council meeting show you what a 20-year budget, 20-year or even a 40. If you look on, I did show the estimated payments, I believe, in the packet. On page, starting on page 18 of your packet, I did show what the minimum fund, the general fund obligation would be, but I only showed a 30 and a 40. I can easily add a 20. So if you would like to see how that
It'd be good to watch people tear stand on their head and see what 20 would be tomorrow.
Sure.
Because I also know that a lot of the wisdom that I'm flying around with, you know, even though we kind of waved it off, I said, I know people worry about committing people for, you know, long past our lifetimes. A lot of us may or may not be alive by the time we hit 30 or 40. So it might be a smart move to show us how radically wild it would be at the 20.
Yeah, we can do 20. I can definitely show 20. I would probably pay with the interest rate a little bit because typically if you do a shorter duration, you get a little bit better interest rate. But I can show what that looks like.
Okay. So that being the case, present company accepted online. I'm going to ask the question that I have every single time we've done this. There is no RFP going out for the project management company. And I have to, yes, we've been doing this for 7 years and we've never entertained the idea of anyone else. What are the foundations of that thinking?
So on this one, right, SOJ started this project. And that, I think, is a big component about why we should continue using SOJ. They're up to speed. They have the relationship with Milo Hayashi. The other thing too is they understand how our city processes work, and so that is an advantage to the city. You know, I completely hear. You know, I'm working on another contract where, you know, the same question could come up. One of the things that I think you always have to balance is, do you know bring someone on? They have to get up to speed with the city. There's going to be those billable hours where they need to understand where the project's at. And so my recommendation is, I think from a cost saving standpoint, SRJ is the right one to use for this project.
Okay. It's what we're familiar with. But I also know literally for 7 years there's been no competitor. So how do we face the taxpayers and say, we know this was the best price. This is the right quality for the right amount of money. And we're talking, you know, $83 million now, but we have a really bad history of saying X amount and it's a lot more. And we're still dealing with the same exact companies.
You want to weigh in, David?
Yeah, David Klein, City Administrator. Good question, Council Member. I'm going to stand up over here. Just make sure I get over there, actually.
We're on
item
two.
So the question, Council Member David Klein, City Administrator, the question was, how do we know we have a good competitive bid? Is because that is how we actually did it back in 2016 when we did go out to the project management team. We had a couple project management team. There are not many that specialize just in civic organizations. And actually, it was SOJ who alerted us to the cost estimates and changed our practices and actually brought new and better numbers to the council so that when you did adopt the 2018 D20 model, that was because SOJ was with you. And SOJ has guided the public safety plan from the beginning and has moved along with that. And so this is the finishing of the public safety plan, is the final piece of the public works plan. So I think that's within line with what the council's vision of the public safety plan was.
So, Michelle, my question was, as much as I love SOJ, my experience is on most contracts, we've built three buildings, four buildings, one rental thing. We're on a complex. And projects this size for that much money, I've never not thrown out another bid to see who's in the neighborhood, who's got what experience, who's capable of doing it, and whether or not their competitive bid is better and we see it to have quality. Mm-hmm. It's pretty bold of us to just keep going with the same one and saying, oh yeah, they've got it calculated just right for us and nobody could do as much or more for less or have other things that trade out that make it enticing to the taxpayer.
That's a council policy decision. We did competitively bid. I think the proof is actually in the experience that you have received from SOJ. Mm-hmm. And if we had moved faster on the public workshops phase two, it wouldn't have taken us that long. But I think that they have guided the council and working with one PMQA, they actually are the ones who brought and suggested a new PMQA who's providing good advice to the council as we go along.
I would also say that I'm still in my question. I'll get to you in a second.
If I could just this. We have had competitive processes for the architects for each of the projects. For other of the consultant services, SRJ and the city have had competitive processes. The GCCM is a process that we have, of course, you know, John is, you know, we definitely want to do that same process. We have to get permission from the state of Washington to do that, but it's so the contractor will be a competitive process as well. So the whole project team, yes, the SRJ is part of all that. However, there the other elements have been competitive, have gone out through a competitive process.
I'm going to pause, let you have questions, and then I'm going to offer time to Councilman Clinton. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's pretty bold of us to keep moving on. I think it's just logical because they started out this project. They have done an excellent job. There's continuity there. There's all those reasons that where it would be pretty bold of us to just maybe keep on with other particular, all the other subcontractors that they were just talking about. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. But I think that for the reasons stated, it makes sense. And they're doing a really good job. And so, and they have that historical knowledge. So I think that's pretty important to me. But COMET stands for the subcontractor.
Right. I just want to say, I have nothing against SOJ, but in my experience, competition is competition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, pass the blush test for the public. We are now on our seventh year with the comparison. Councilman Quinn, did you want to take the line of questioning at all?
No, I mean, I think what was helpful to hear subcontractors and other components being competitively bid. And I would say that, and I don't know about the PMQA, I'd love to hear from him, but I think sometimes that's where you get a project scope going beyond what was originally proposed, but hearing that from the I'm okay.
Just so you know, just prior to your arrival, he gave his looming report.
Okay.
Put something in writing and sign for the field.
Okay, we can save time.
Okay. No, I don't want to. You can ask him questions if you want to.
No, but I think that would be my experience doing the projects and then also the bidding environment as well. So those are factors.
I'm not going to belabor the point on the contractor. I just want to have somebody in the room say, what did we do there? Did we do a check? And there's one voice in the room was saying, what do we stand on? When the public says, you never offered bids to anybody else.
I think we did competitively bid this contract. It is continued that contract. We competitively bid all our architects, and we brought that. We changed architects from Public Works Shops Phase 1 and 2. And each of these contracts, actually, SOJ is our partner, is really our client representative, working on behalf of the city to negotiate good cost-effective deals on each of these contractors that we're going to bid. So I think they're a good partner with us.
I think they're good people. I like them a lot. They do a good job. As anecdotally, I've got no problem. But I don't have a lot of faith. I think since we're the keepers of purse strings, I mean, now it's going to be a great deal. It makes sense for us to ask, where's the data that says they're better or higher, able to leak buildings in a single bound compared to anybody else that can offer. But we're open to the same comments from competitors and others who say we never came around to them. So, and we're going out for additional funding, not from the public safety building, on this complex, correct? We're doing an LGETO,
yeah,
alphabetic vote, so
yeah.
It's not the same as the.
Yeah, so the council has been involved in all of these decisions.
Right. I just want to point out that it's not the same as running off on the public safety bond. Yeah. Right, it's a simple activity, and if we pull some funds out, how do you get it on the dam? And if you're a competitive company, and I have to ask the question publicly because. We're just kind of breezing along here, saying they're really great people. I love the buildings they go.
Well, the data would be that they give you monthly reports as part of the city administrator report. They show how you're on budget, and they have stayed on budget since the D20 model was adopted and actually brought to us by SOJ since 2018. So I think 5 years of good buildings, even within budget, keeping you appraised every month, I think it's good data points.
We need a check in the box saying no one else has ever had a chance to do the same and offer services, and we don't actually know. We just like these guys. Yeah. Okay. Councilmember Crane, did you have other questions before I go through my questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
made a couple of notes. And then missed that. Have we talked to anybody that we think we're going to get rent from? Are we the only ones we're going to get rent from ourselves?
So King County, I believe, David, if you could help me, charging the city's utilities a service fee or a rent or some type of obligation to be on a property is not uncommon. I believe King County did that with.
Yeah. So quick question, and I'll just give the briefing, is that a key philosophy in general accounting, and we have our finance and deputy finance director here, is utilities cannot subsidize the general fund. And the same goes that the general fund cannot subsidize utilities. And so if you're a utility in Water District 125 or Highland Water District, they pay for the buildings and rent the buildings. And so it seems to be that if you're a utility, you should rent your facilities. And so that is the underlying basis of that. And that has been in other places, other government agencies too. If they have a utility, the utility pays their full fair share and no more.
So as a follow-up, this is a way to get taxpayers to pay the utilities the additional rent costs and move it over to the general fund.
It is for the utilities to pay their full share. It's not.
I don't even want to put a spin on it. It is a mechanism to take taxpayer money and move it over to the general fund because you cannot do what you just said before. Right?
So
we have
to get a spin on it. I'm just going to interrupt.
Right. It's utilities paying their share. And if the utilities bought this from a private company, they would pay that private company for that rent. They happen to be on general fund, publicly owned land, so they pay the general fund rent.
Okay. How did we get this far without doing this before?
It was probably during our council policy, and actually as we were moving through this, and this is part of the truing up of costs, mm-hmm. is something that is going to be a policy question that we'll bring back to the council.
All right. We're talking about...
On that point. There's
I'm ready to give you the floor and ask all the questions you want. I'll go after you. Okay. So we'll take it.
I'm good. So on that point.
I don't want to be peppered. I'd like to answer my questions and then have you ask any questions you want or vice versa. Mm-hmm. Do you have questions? Just go for it.
No.
Okay. Thank you. Land sales, $60 million is what you're thinking may go. It may go against the $60 million. Or you said $30 million we'd get?
No. If you look on page 13 of your packet, which is also... So, I did various scenarios, right? 13 is assuming no land sales, just for a worst case scenario. And then starting on page 14, mm-hmm. I show about $9.5 million coming in 2025. Okay. That's a low estimate for what we have outstanding. So that was just shown, a low number showing going into 2025.
So you said we had budgeted for $60 million, 50-50 split to the general fund, and land sales could go against.
Land sales would go
50-50 or just against the public works only or the 50 that goes to the general fund?
So land sales, since those facilities are currently owned by the general fund, would go against the general fund's portion of the property. That's what staff's recommending. Now, this financial model, that is something we would hammer out as we get closer to construction. The council can change that. The council can go and say, we don't want to have land sales, we're split 50-50, or we'll put all the money towards the utilities. I don't think that works because the general fund owns those properties and purchased those properties. Mm-hmm. But that is just, those are, what this model is intended to be is to show that there is a path forward to build. We don't have to make, as I said, we're not asking for money for construction, but we want to show you that there is a path forward and that we're going to have ongoing discussions as we get closer to construction. But I did not want to ask for $5.9 million of design work if there was no way that we had a path forward for construction. And so that's why there's various ways that this model is being shown.
So council has a policy of putting land sales against debt. We've had a couple stumblings, including last summer when we got an sale of surplus and put it towards something else. But I'm now watching that and saying, is this part of that or is this a different scenario?
So I can't speak to that. What we would propose is it's debt that we don't have to issue if we put the land sales towards the public safety bond. Towards public works. So instead of like on page 13 where I show us no land sales, we would issue all of that debt. Instead, we would reduce the amount of debt we have, essentially using our land sales as a down payment.
So it's a different strategy compared to take all land sales and pay down the debt that we already
have. I have a question about that.
Sure, just let him answer that. I'm just trying to understand it.
Well, I'm just having something about that. I don't think we have a policy, do we? Do
we have sure said it 6 or 7 times during the budget process.
We did.
Yes.
Where is it?
I have to look through our financial policies. I don't recall that one being in writing, but I just have to go back and look and see if it's there.
So I will get it for you. I took notes on that during, and I kept my budget book. I'll be happy to bring it to you. Because I was trying to get land sales to go a different direction, and I was told council policy was that it goes against the debt. And then I brought up what happened when we got a windfall for about $2 million, and out of context, we actually passed it against our own policy without our actually reflecting that in context. And this is, I would like things to be reliable. It doesn't have to be reliable. And I'd like it not to be held up as a rule if it's not a rule. Okay, so that's what the root of the question is. I'm pretty good at cost management, and I just keep getting told it's going this way, so you can't go that way. And so I'm asking for clarity. Mm-hmm. Maybe it doesn't exist at all. That'd be great. I'll go get my notes. So
all I can speak to is that we originally had land sales going in the D20 model,
mm-hmm.
but since the D20 model with the change in the fire costs, those land sales are no longer needed to support the D20 model. And so those are funds that are now available. Now, I council member, your question, you know, things, I don't know what was said. I wasn't part of the budget process. So I'll let the other individuals answer that. But things could have also changed since that was said last. And the big change here is the apparatuses that we do not have to pay as part of the D20 model.
And then I just want to reinforce the ARPA funds. We don't sure know that we can get them, but there may be $4.9 million in play.
We are going to go for ARPA funds. Our goal here is to go for ARPA funds for the design and maybe even for the construction or just for one of the two. And so our goal is to go, if we get those funds, it would reduce the allocation that the general fund and the utilities have to pay proportionately. So we're gonna make an effort for ARPA funds. No guarantee, of course, but we want to see if we can get them.
Okay, except for a couple of questions that I have that I guess all to dig in and actually be absolutely firm on as a council. I'm actually in support of where this is going, and I appreciate the offering to do a 20-year by the time it hits council. And if our PMQA can put in writing what he said, I think that would be a nice point where the council said we touch base and this is the report. Makes sense to go forward. Council member, you got notes and he's got maybe possibly questions. And so I'm trying to get it. Who needs to speak?
I'm done. I got everything answered. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll just say I just don't appreciate the way that I've been spoken to here. I'm just trying to do the job. But what I will say is when there's commentaries about what the council says or does, we just need to go to the record, have that factual information. Again, I'll say it. I respect everyone, even if I don't agree with you. And it's how you treat somebody. You think somebody's looking and you think nobody's looking. So I don't appreciate it.
I will take that into consideration. Likewise, we've had this happen in several meetings where I've left. Both council members have full opportunity to speak before me, and then when I start to ask questions, I get a cross-examination in the middle of the questions. And I never do that to you in the middle of your questions, unless I literally don't understand the answer. So I would like that respect to be reflected back as
well. Sure. I was budget chair last year,
yep,
and I was very mindful of following up.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I'll say, though. The difference is that there's a council policy, and we need some clarification. Or fundamentally, there's financial information that can be clarified and not just sit as fact,
mm-hmm.
because we do have a public responsibility. And so when my question was there, it was about the enterprise fund and about auditors' processes associated with the enterprise fund, but I didn't get to sit there. So we can move on.
Again, did not mean to ruffle feathers, but at the same
time. Not ruffle feathers, but disrespect.
If I'm in my fair space to ask questions,
sure.
I'd like that respect.
Sure. I can say, hey, I don't have a question, or I can come back around. That's how you do it.
And again, if interrupted, which I have been several times in the last few meetings, I'm finally just saying I don't prefer that unless you literally are missing a clarification of what someone just said.
It was a clarification, and I raised my hand.
And you did. But I still didn't know what their answer was, and I think I reserve the right, after giving everyone a chance, to have my line of questioning. I appreciate that space, just like I try to give it to you.
Can I have a chance to talk?
Absolutely.
So I just didn't want to go too much farther with a conversation based on the fact that this was a council policy when we're not sure. Otherwise, I'm
going to He's not. I agree with your need to ask, but I'd like to finish my line of questioning. This is not a courtroom where you got objection and overruled and all that. This is an amateur layperson asking questions about the budget and her recollection of our budget process that we just finished. And I remember distinct points and guardrails and constraints that were put in place. So I'm recalling them. Maybe I'm not accurate, but they're very distinct checks in that process that occurred that I remember pretty sharply. And maybe I misunderstood them, but I don't think so. Those are the notes that I took. So we'll see what the others deal with it. But I think it's important for us to say what is a rule and what is not a rule and come to agreement on that. And we kind of moved all over the place during that budget.
So did you hear what I said? I said I didn't want to continue with that line of reasoning if that was not the council policy.
Well, what that does is says if you don't understand that line of reasoning or can't confirm it right in one meeting, then another council member can't question or have questions for the rest of the meeting. That doesn't make sense.
Did you hear what I said?
I said
that if that was not a confirmed council policy, that I was questioning it so that we could see about whether or not we should go along with that line of reasoning.
And I think that shouldn't stop a line of questioning because you're not sure.
That's fair.
That's fair. Okay. Any other questions or comments on this topic? Thank you, Brandon. Let's move on to item
one. I'm really sorry. Can I clarify for the record? Mm-hmm. Is this going forward to the COW with unanimous recommendation to proceed with a design contract?
That's a good question. Do we have consensus to move this forward to COW?
Yes, for me.
And then subsequently to the regular meeting.
Yeah, I'd like some clarification on some council policy and why it's not council policy.
Yeah, we'll get that.
Thank you.
I think we'll be addressing all of that at COW, but your consensus?
Yeah. I don't want to miss the opportunity. I think that's the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is part of the reason why we do follow-up is to make sure that the record is solid.
Okay. That's unanimous.
Thank you.
On to one C, general fund update, March 2023, Tony Fulton, Deputy Finance Director. Thank you, and discussion on it.
Yes, thank you, Tony Fullerton, Deputy Finance Director. This is the March General Fund Expenditure Report. So the General Fund Departmental expenditures totaled $17.2 million through March, which is approximately $2 million below the allocated budget of $19.1 million. At the end of March, all the departments were within their allocated budget, with the exception of fire. I want to point out that with fire, it's the large portion of that has to do with WCIA insurance premium rate increase. And so we will hear that insurance rate increase throughout this report. Fire was the only one that rose to that level in the allocated budget because their budget is stripped away. Now, what I mean by that is all of the departments have salaries, benefits, services, supplies. Fire just has a pension, professional services. So you can't. It doesn't get compensated anywhere else. I guess I'm saying that because I don't want to make a bigger deal out of this fire than it is. And anyway, moving to the percent expended. So when we look at this column, what I'm looking at is any amount that is greater than the completed percentage of the year. So as of March, we're looking at things that are greater than 25% end of first quarter. And so I think there were three departments that report higher than 25%. And I just want to zip through those very briefly. Finance was at 26.8%, and this is again attributed to the liability insurance premium as well as audit costs. The audit costs didn't cost more, but the audit 2022 audit went into 2023 against our recommendation. Auditors are on a schedule. They have specific audits to get done. They have to meet deadlines. And so we agreed to let them do our financial single audit and then come back and do accountability later. So that's what pushed it into there. Fire. We talked about fire. It's the increase in the WCI insurance, $88,000 there. Public Works and Street Maintenance came in a little bit higher. Again, insurance, as well as there's some utility costs that were higher. And we've talked about this in prior months. Specifically, that's the new facility maintenance building that opened up. And so, again, moving further to the right, we look at dollar changes from 2022 to 2023. And I try and drill into changes that are greater than 5%, $50,000. And so, let's see what we have there. We'll start out with administrative services. They have an increase, looks like $131,062. And this has to do with salaries. I think $66,000 of that is salaries. And what we had is a longtime employee retired. We also had a reclassification of an employee there. So that's how we come up with that $66,000. Technology services, which is part of admin services. That's an increase in online subscription services. And I did just list the largest amounts in my memo. It's on page 4. You see the $119,000 of just large subscription services. Kind of give you an idea of what those costs were pertaining to. And then moving along to recreation and parks maintenance, they have an increase of about $104,000 over the same period last year. And this has to do with salary increases that are a part of the restoration of services, and additionally increases in security and safety. We've kind of reported that in the past also, so a continuation of that. And those details are in the report on my memo, page 4. I kind of just list out on the table just to kind of give an idea of what we're talking about, what services have been restored, what the costs are. Police. They came up a little bit higher, 18% higher than last year. Similar to what we've talked about in the past. So we're talking about salary based on contract agreements, also increases in services, dispatch, score, jail, and those sorts of things. Again, we've reported those in the past. So just along the same trend lines. And then in fire, we have that increase in insurance. There's also a training component on an invoice that's been paid. So it's kind of the same story we've seen in the past. A little bit more there. Public Works and Street Maintenance. Insurance premiums, as well as the utility increase for the new building that we talked about. Felt like a couple things to point out when we look at the departments. General fund by category. We see some changes there. So I feel like I just zipped right through those. So I apologize for that. Going a little too fast. I did want to point out, though, there's a decline in DCD. Let's see, a little slower here. So on my packet on page 3, we look at the different departments. We see what's above and beyond. I apologize for jumping back and forth.
Okay. So you're on page 43 of us.
Good, page 3. So we went through what those increases are. I did want to call out DCD, though, because when you look at that, they're the one department that has spent less this quarter than last year than any other department. And so I looked into that, see just what that decrease is. And it's actually an example of the financial stewardship. So what's gone on is they've withheld some payments to technology, to make software maintenance. There was some problems with delivering services, so they withheld payments. So two things to say. There's not excess budget there. That issue is going to be resolved, and they will pay that. But it was just an example of good financial stewardship, so I thought I'd call that out. Okay, general fund by category. Page 7 of my report. So there's only one category that rose higher than 25%, and that is total services. And so I looked into the different line items in there to get an understanding of what those are. And so we just get through those real quickly. professional services, see up on the top here, 28%. That is the fire contract services. You see it's 4.2 million. That's a lot. Those numbers were reported in salaries previously. So there are no salaries. So it's now in professional services. So it seems like a lot. It's a lot compared to last year, but they were previously reported in another line item last year. We also have professional development. Memberships have increased. Registrations have increased. And then some tuition and coaching was the increase on that also. Technology services. Earlier in the report, we saw the invoices that related to that, to their online subscriptions. That's what that is. And then repair and maintenance, we see a decline there, almost $250,000, $238,000. We've been talking about expenses and increases. I did want to call that out because that is attributed to a council policy agreement where we changed policy on our fleet leasing. And that is an example of some savings we got for the first quarter of fleet operation maintenance, that paying less. And so congratulations to council for approving that policy and recommending some savings. And that will be the end of my report.
Council members, Councilmember Quinn, questions?
Yeah, unless this is already asked, I'll ask it. Overtime?
Yeah.
Up top, is that fire?
Okay. Police.
Police. Okay.
So a couple things. Police has, they have some unfilled positions. So their salaries are not as high, but the overtime
is high. Okay. And is okay. And compared to the last time, is it gradually going up? Is it just for this
quarter? Yeah. Well, for this quarter, it's up. And
okay.
I'm not sure what the future is going to hold with that, but I expect it to continue to, you know, be higher than the previous years.
Okay.
Same time previous year. And the reason for that specifically, I'm not saying they're working more hours than they were before, but due to bargaining agreements, their salaries have gone up.
Right.
And so what I'm talking about is the hourly wage
mm-hmm.
is up. So when we look at overtime, even if they worked the same amount of overtime last year, it would cost more because of the cost of living and increases.
All right. And then on the medical and dental, is that just high utilization? What's that?
Medical and dental, those rates just increase every year. And I guess it's hard for us to determine what we guess as best we can, but it's hard to know what those rates are. Similar to that WCIA insurance.
Yeah.
You just don't know how much it's going to increase.
Right, and that's actuary report, but is there a trend there, or we don't know?
I cannot tell you, 3%, 5%. I feel like we budget high for that.
Yeah,
we may assume, based on CPI, we may go 8%, but those talking about benefits, they just come in.
Right. I guess what I'm asking is, at this point, post-pandemic, are we seeing like a significant?
Yes.
Okay.
What I'm saying is insurance rates are still high post-pandemic.
Thank you. That's all.
Okay. Councilmember Hogarth.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, do you have any way to guess what the medical and dental, this is with our self-insured, and that's why it's the way that it is, right? You said something like, do you have some sort of way to determine that or some resource, or you just have to guess? I mean,
yeah, I think what we do, and maybe I'll ask for help here, I think we look at prior trends in history and see what those increases are and then make a good estimate, but I feel like we have not nailed that down. Maybe
the way we budget for salaries and benefits, including medical, is we do get estimates from our healthcare provider to know what the rates are going to be for the next year, and then when we budget based on the employee's current level of medical. So, for example, we could put a budget together that somebody that's single, and then they get married and have kids, and so the medical rate is different from what we budgeted for. We also have to put in an estimate in for any vacant positions. We usually put in full medical, and because that's kind of the worst case, that's the conservative budgeting method. But it gets tricky when you come to people that are already on staff and then they change their level of care because their personal circumstances have changed.
Okay. So I have a the only other detailed question I was wondering. So professional development includes travel, right? Like in
yes, it does. Okay. It includes all costs associated with professional development.
Okay. So if I say that sometimes some of these were over and under, this just sort of fluctuates all the way through the year until it lands at the end, right? I mean, sometimes you're over, sometimes you're under, depending on when you pay something or
yeah,
when
so
you do.
This is the first year we put spend plans in place. In our prior years, we've always just had an annual bucket. And we've either tried to allocate the budget, just divide by 12 and call it good, or we've actually looked at prior year history to say, here's, we think the spend plan is going to be the
okay,
same as last
have
year.
A spend plan.
But what we did this year, because of our new ERP system, is we actually went to departments and said, tell us what you think your spend plan is going to be this year. And so that's what you, when you see the allocated budget, it's based on what people thought they were going to do this year. So it's not based on historical trends, it's based on current plans. And then we have been meeting with departments every month, every other month to try and get an understanding of why those might change. You know, because plans do change and we want to be able to provide those answers, have a better understanding of what's going on in departments, and also help departments to understand their budgets better as well.
Right. And then some things are not something that they thought was going to happen one quarter might happen.
It could get pushed off to another. So what my goal is with doing this allocated budget based on current year, is to spot potential issues early. So for example, if somebody is higher than their allocated budget, why? Is it because they just simply changed their plans and spent something earlier than they had? Or did they have a cost increase that wasn't expected? And so now we can ask those targeted questions and get better information as to what's going on. And again, alert us to potential problems much earlier than we've been able to in the past.
Well, good. So even though it doesn't like, good. I mean, I don't know. I'm not an expert at this, but it looks like that sounds like a great plan. Everything's kind of close except for a few things. And so thank you for the report.
Okay. I actually had all my questions answered on this process of you two asking questions, so I have nothing more to add. I am very excited from conversations with Vicki and you about how department heads and other people responsible for cost management are learning more and more. And seeing the patterns that you're seeing and maybe better at predicting what's going to happen with you. So this is really exciting growth going on this year. Appreciate that.
I'm excited about it too.
Yeah. All right. Item 1D, comprehensive financial sustainability plan to include an RFP, request for proposals review. Vicki Carlson, finance director, can bring this up. It's discussion only.
Yeah, so Vicki Carlson, finance director. So if I could direct your attention to page 49 of the packet. In the interest of time, I will go through this fairly quickly. Really what we want to do is we just want to loop you into what this process has been so far and ask for feedback so we can put this RFP on the screen. So if you might remember back when we did the budget for 2023-2024, we did ask for and receive authority for $200,000 for a comprehensive financial sustainability plan. And the idea of this plan is to review the city's operating and capital improvement programs. And what we're looking for is short-term, like 2 to 5 years, and long-term, 6 to 10-year plans for the city to consider current and future programs and programs and projects and services that the city offers. Given that we want this to be a full comprehensive plan, we determined that we wanted to go ahead and add a utility rate study to this as an element of this. They help, again, be beneficial in planning the city's budget for next year, including the utility funds. So our goal is to have this completed by April 1st of next year. So it will be a tool for the 2025-2026 biennial budget process, as well as future budget. What we want to do is we want to provide an understanding of the city's current financial position and develop levers or tools that can be used to provide the right mix of resources necessary to achieve the operational programs and services, as well as capital improvement programs that are desired by residential and business communities. We've timed this to coincide with the facility study, so we have a comprehensive facility study that's going to look at both capital and maintenance. We want to make sure we've got a good comprehensive plan to maintain our existing facilities, and also a business planning process related to the Foster Golf Course, so the outcomes of those two studies can be incorporated into this plan. What our proposed timeline is to have you provide input tonight, We'd like to get this published by May 15th so that we can have consultants give us their responses back by the beginning of June, with the idea of having somebody on board by July of this year. And then the plan to be finalized and presented to City Council no later than April 1st of 2024. So we're looking for input from you tonight. And what I'd like to do, so we did try and put together a comprehensive document for consultants to review, but I'd like to direct your attention to page, let me get to here, page 56, the bottom of 56, and on to page 57. This is the scope of work that we're looking for, and this is where we'd really like to have your input, and I'll just review this very quickly. So we want a consultant to review city programs and services, as well as looking at the existing programs and service levels, look at our existing finances and forecasts, as well as our operating and capital budget, look at our current and upcoming major capital improvement initiatives. We want the consultant to meet with each department to have a really good understanding of what our programs and services are. We want to look at historical usage of our services, and then also what that future usage could look like based on population and employment projections. We do plan to facilitate an advisory committee process with employees, labor partners, city advisory board or commission members, business representatives to be part of this process. We want to develop a comprehensive set of fiscal sustainability strategies. Again, looking short-term 2 to 5 years and long-term 6 to 10 years. We want to do a process for City Council to review, consider, and accept this plan, and then accept the firm's final report, present the findings to City Council and the Temple of Community, and then provide us a calendar for how they're going to meet this deadline. And then at the bottom of page 57 is the steps for the utility rate study. It might be one consultant doing both, or we might bifurcate that and have one do the comprehensive financial sustainability plan and another consultant doing the utility rates. This is the proposed RFP, and again, looking for input feedback from the committee so we can go ahead and get these photos.
That's a little quick cafe forgery at this point.
Thank you.
Highlights and
yeah.
Pieces of paper. There.
Yeah. That's how I read it.
It's all good.
So you're going to fold this in with the Foster Golf Course plan, the utilities plan. There's one other one.
The facilities plan.
Yeah.
They're going to be independent studies.
Right.
I believe that Brandon Miles is heading up the facilities maintenance study. Mr. Mayor is doing the golf course study. So they'll be independent, but we want them to be completed so they can dovetail and be folded into this comprehensive study.
Yeah.
The idea is, again, to get a comprehensive look at the entire city's operations.
So coordinated timing of all those things.
That's cool.
Yeah, and so then moving on to the page 56, where you had the schedule and the critical path, I couldn't see anything else. I mean, it looks like you've got it all here. You've got potential for lots of touch points with the City Council in here. You've got an advisory committee that's like under number one that includes labor partners, city commissions, community members. It just looks like it's all here. And then the study of the water supply, that 30-year rate model, I think is going to be something that's really important. Because we want to have a little bit of certainty with that. And, of course, like you said, you're going to make a model and you're going to have to plug it in and change it. But I think that's something that's really important for the city to have. And so I am in support, and that's all I have to say.
Councilmember Quinn.
Yeah, I'm in support. You know, I read it over the weekend, and the one thing I noticed that wasn't in the scope is it. You have the historical pieces here, but unfunded mandates. I mean, there have been a bunch of unfunded mandates since 2008. And then the sustainability model, right, if we're honest about it, notwithstanding a new revenue source, there are probably some businesses we're going to have to get out of just based on the 1%. But then I think the other piece is just making sure we can communicate critical infrastructure needs. So those are the things that really jumped out. But the unfunded mandates, right? I'm thinking about the Public Works Fund at state. There were quite a few other unfunded mandates, and then there are also the governments around us that are going to be impacted significantly. And whatever that infrastructure investment was, will go away. And so there's an impact associated with that. So those were the things that jumped out, especially just the unfunded mandates, the override program also. So for now, I mean, I'm comfortable with
that. That's a great point. I'm definitely going to add that because I just want to ask.
Good points all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know, Wilder, but like every 5 years we have a Howard Hanson dam or we have a massive economic downturn or we end up with a COVID, which is pretty wild across a 100-year cycle. Can we factor in anything for an event?
You know, that's actually a really good point. My plan is definitely to incorporate that into it, but I think that's a good point to add it, along with the unfunded mandates, is to call attention to that. Like we do. We do get that on a fairly regular basis.
So about every 5 years, it feels like. And so it just seems like there ought to be, it's not an in fact contingency, which is what I would push for. You know, just factor it in, at least a ghost contingency. If this happened to us, what is our fallback plan? Hopefully we're better off now than we were during Howard Hanson BAM when we drained our emergency funds. So we're sitting in a better place, but, you know, I think a lot of us all sit there and go, oh, we use it that. It's getting too big. We should use it for something else. And I'm thinking to myself, if you're going to talk 30 years, for 30 years, it's a lot of 5-year spans that might.
Yeah, I can definitely add some more.
See what the expert says, right?
And it might, mm-hmm. just to tag on that point, we probably have some reserve policy language we can look at, too, that may need to get bolstered. Emergency reserve that's more specific or it's different than working capital.
Right. Every time we have a budget process, I'm guilty of it too. We all throw our eye over there and then we walk, we avert our eyes again, but everybody does it. And so that's not really what it's for. So anyway, that was the only thing I had when I read this was just events.
I appreciate the feedback. We'll definitely get something incorporated. And then we'll plan to get this published next week, hopefully on the 15th.
Okay.
Thank you.
Happy to come back on the 22nd for my item. We can hopefully devote.
Time to run through them?
Yeah, probably okay. A little bit.
All right. Then what we're saying, if anybody public or the recording is paying attention, is that we're not going to take on item 1E and move it to another meeting because we're getting too close to the city council. So with that, this meeting's adjourned. Thank you.